We hope to fellowship
with
you soon.
Greetings to the Path family. Our slogan at the Path is meeting you where you are. We invite you to follow, share, and check us out on social media. You may connect with us at any time, anywhere. On Facebook at The Path Church or Instagram and Twitter at Join the Path. Without further delay, enjoy this week's sermon.
Good to see you all. Thank you. Welcome to our worship service here at The Path. My name is Jazz Vick. I'm the outreach pastor here. And if you're visiting with us, we're so grateful to have you. I'm just grateful to be able to give my little contribution to our Marvel Summer Blockbuster series. Have y'all been enjoying it so far? Good. So I bet none of y'all could guess what movie I would pick. Now, if you know me, who knew I was going to pick Black Panther? Y'all already know that was the one I was going to go with if we had a Marvel summer. But before we go ahead and get into it, take out your devices for me. Go on Facebook. Go to the Path Church Atlanta and share the live stream so you can bring everybody else in with you as we go on this journey today. And so Black Panther came out last February, and who remembers all of the hoopla around Black Panther? I mean, like, people went to the theater, they had kente cloth on. No, they didn't even own kente cloth before Black Panther came out. And then we were dressed up. Who dressed up? I ain't gonna lie, I dressed up. Showtimes were selling out, and people were showing out, all to see Black Panther. And then, in the first 4 weeks, it sold $1 billion. It grossed $1 billion because it was where the intersectionality of the Marvel comic book aficionados and the Marvel fans and then just people that were doing it for the culture. That's when they all came out. And we too dressed up. We felt a little fancy because we had our own private screening of Black Panther. You see, folks was over there. I just wanted to do it, like Wakanda forever. Everybody was doing it, so I did it too. Now, if you didn't see the movie, it is past the statute of limitations for spoiler alerts. It has been out for a year and a half and is on Netflix. So if I tell you something you didn't know, that's on you, all right? But the basic premise of the movie is this. There is an invisible kingdom of Wakanda that has incomprehensible resources. But to the world around it, it's poor. The king T'Challa is powerful yet meek, and he knows that there's a way that justice should be carried out, but eventually there's a challenger to his throne, Killmonger. And so real quick, let me just take a poll. Who's your favorite character in Black Panther? Just yell it out. Who's your favorite character? T'Challa? T'Chaka? Who liked Killmonger? Nobody like Killmonger? No, you're too problematic. Okay. Well, see, Killmonger comes in, and his entire life has been spent stealing, killing, destroying, and manipulating so that he could one day overthrow the king of Wakanda and turn those who are loyal to join his army. And then eventually there will be this epic battle between T'Challa's forces and Killmonger's forces. You see, this is why you can't go to the movies with preachers, because we always find a sermon and y'all just trying to watch a movie. I sat down and watched this. I had 4 pages of notes watching the movie. I ain't used none of them for the sermon. You see, Jesus is the powerful king of an invisible kingdom with incomprehensible resources that wants to allow those in his kingdom access to those resources. Yet there is an opposing force that wants to enlist as many as possible for the ultimate showdown. And that's a formidable force and a formidable face-off. And that's my title of the message today is Face-Off. Face-Off. Now, much of the narrative of Scripture points to this premise that there is an otherworldly battle going on, and it's not just happening in Hollywood. It's not just happening on a movie screen, but it's happening all around us. There's a war being waged, and for your very soul. The war that's being waged is for our souls. And the scariest part about it is that many of us don't even know it. There is a war. Let's open up our Bibles to 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2. I'm planning on giving you a few scriptures today, so hopefully you have your notepads or you got your phones out ready to take notes, because the goal is always for you to take these scriptures and figure out, what does it mean for me as I take these and apply these to my life? 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 11. If you're there, say there. If you need some more time, say, hold up. You got 4 seconds. Time's up. It's on the screen. Right. Dear friends, as temporary residents and foreigners, I warn you, keep away from worldly desires that wage war against your souls. There is a war. Everybody say, there's a war. See, Peter in 1 Peter was writing to fellow Christians and reminding them that this world is not your home. And we have a responsibility to be careful to realize that there is a war being waged for your very life. And not only your life, but your soul. One of the greatest tricks that an enemy, any enemy, can have is to convince people that they do not exist. And Satan has done an amazing job of that. He's done an amazing job making us believe that there is no real fight. There's no real enemy. And even now, there are people preaching in pulpits saying that Satan doesn't exist, that hell doesn't exist. And so what are we fighting for? Because if there is no opposition, there is no war. So much of this comes because we don't realize our stakes are high. This disillusionment and fear or lack of understanding that there's a war leaving our souls and our hearts vulnerable to all types of attacks. And if you don't embrace that there's a war, then you never embrace the reality that you have to choose a side. If you find somebody that plays both sides, what do you usually call that? You can call it a few things, a traitor, a spy. Because if you're straddling the fence, that means you're trying to figure out how to do both. But see, not choosing side often means you're either unclear or you're a spy. Thinking about Black Panther, I find it really interesting that Killmonger's objective was always to get to the king, but he was perfectly fine waiting it out. He was perfectly fine stealing, killing, destroying, and manipulating for 30 years for the ultimate goal of getting to the king. And Satan's playing the same thing. He's playing the same game, waiting, and buying his time, and he's been doing it for way longer than 30 years. He's been doing it since the very beginning of humanity, waiting for his ultimate revenge. As a matter of fact, in 1 Peter chapter 5, we're going to look at 1 Peter chapter 5 as well. It's once again, Peter talking to his fellow Christians. 1 Peter 5 in verse 8. He says, stay alert. Everybody say, stay alert. Wake up. Watch for your great enemy, the devil. He prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. Stand firm against him and be strong in your faith. Remember that your Christian brothers and sisters all over the world are going through the same kind of suffering. Stay alert. Why would we have to stay alert if there wasn't a war? Why would we have to keep our heads on a swivel if there wasn't something to be aware of? We wouldn't. Sometimes we don't realize that the very thing that we need to be on guard against are those things that are counterfeit in our lives that look enough like the real thing to lure us away from God. If Satan has been doing this since the very beginning of humanity, you think he might have perfected some tools by now? He might have perfected a few choice tools to get us off of our game. It might be those things in our lives that seem like good decisions but aren't quite God's will for us, but we don't want to wait. Or even the things in our lives that aren't good for us, but they meet an immediate need and get us to forget that they are actually waging war for our souls. You see, there's things like discouragement, our desires, discord, disillusionment, dysfunction, our daily demands, dreams deferred. Has anybody ever had a dream deferred? Like you wanted something, but you thought it was within your grasp, and then it just slipped away. Have you ever been disillusioned? You thought church would be that fun place to go and those people disappointed you? Ever been disillusioned to think that your life would just automatically get better just because you started following Jesus? And then when it didn't happen, you were like, I'm disillusioned. Or when things seem to go well and all of a sudden there's a barrage of bullets flying at your head. Can I be honest with y'all? This was a hard week. I got to preach today? And yet, I've been to 3 funerals in 3 weeks. I got to see people who aren't quite old buried. And the emotional toil that goes with that, and then still caring for other people, still being present, still showing up. And then my car, stuff gets stolen out of my car. I gotta preach on Sunday? So if you don't think there's a war, I promise you, there is. And if you're not ready for battle, if you don't recognize what Peter is saying in his letter to other Christians, he's saying, look, be on guard. Satan is waiting. Lions are very patient. When they hunt, they're patient. They'll wait till you get tired. They're not worried about, they're not going to expend all of their energy until they know they're about to kill you. And Satan does the same thing. He just waits. He waits. He waits. And he waits till you're tired, and then all of a sudden, donezo. And we all face it because there's a war. All these are real things that Peter tries to warn us about to keep our footing. And have you ever thought about why would Peter be able to write this to these people now? Well, it's probably because Peter himself fell into the trap. You see, Peter was the one who, he said, Jesus, I'll never deny you. And then when the heat got a little too hot, he denied him 3 times. I don't know him. Hey, man, you definitely got them Nazareth 5s on. You know Jesus. I don't know him. Man, you sound just like him. I swear to God, I don't know him. That's the guy who said, be alert. The same guy who, after Jesus died on the cross, probably felt a little disillusioned. He said, I just gave up my fishing enterprise, and now he's dead. I gave up my family life to follow him, and now he's dead. He probably felt like that everything that he had built was dead. He probably felt like all was lost, and Satan had dealt what seemed like the crushing blow when Jesus died on the cross. And Satan, he probably felt like Satan was saying the same thing Killmonger said when he killed T'Challa. Is this your king? Hanging on the cross, he's supposed to be powerful. Is this your king? Is this your king? When Killmonger killed T'Challa, he gloated. I imagine if Satan had a face, I would probably make it Killmonger's face. He was convinced that it was the final battle and that he would reign victorious. And in so many ways, death is so final. For the disciples, Jesus' death seemed like the final blow. For those loyal to T'Challa, it seemed like all hope was lost and that Killmonger would reign victorious. And oftentimes, death is the ultimate victory for Satan. It marks the fulfillment of his plans. And Jesus' death on the cross gave plenty of people the opportunity to think that they had placed their faith in the wrong guy. Can you imagine seeing darkness come over the land and Jesus breathe his last breath and say, it is finished, and you're thinking, there's more. There's supposed to be more. We're supposed to overthrow this government, and you said it's finished? What's finished? You finished? I'm still here, suffering. And we can feel the same way. See, they counted on him to change everything, but because it didn't look the way they thought, they were hurt and let down. Interestingly enough, isn't that how we are with Jesus? Jesus, if I put my faith in you, this is how my life should go. And when disillusionment sets in, I'm ready to switch teams. When the outcome isn't as favorable as I hoped and it didn't manifest the way I had in mind, I'm giving up. I quit. You see, that's why I said that death is the ultimate victory for Satan, because he's not waiting for our physical death for his victory. He's looking to figure out how he can get you to lean in to spiritual death. Because way before physical death, if your spiritual death sets in, he's already winning. You see, he wants to lull you into thinking everything is okay as long as you go to church. As long as you check your attendance, you're good. As long as you read your Bible, you got a streak going on the YouVersion app, you're good. As long as you say a prayer every now and then, you pray before you go to sleep, you thank God for your meal, then everything is all right. But Satan is just fine with that, because as long as he knows you're on his team and you don't know, you're just a spy. You can infiltrate God's kingdom. You can say the right words. You can get in the vicinity of the people, but not advancing his cause, because instead of dying to yourself, we sometimes rather die inside. But what if I told you that the right death will lead to life? What if I told you there's an actual death that will lead to you doing what Jesus calls you to do and to actually knowing that you're on his team? You want to know how we know that? Let's look at Luke chapter 9. Luke chapter 9. Some of y'all might know this passage, but it's always good to go back. Luke chapter 9, verse 23 through 26. Luke 9, 23 through 26. You there? Say there. If you need some more time, say hold up. 3, 2, 1. Then he said to them all, whoever wants to be my disciple, not this is an option if you want to follow me, not it would be nice, I would suggest if you think about following me, you should do this. He said, whoever wants to follow me, wants to be my disciple, must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow. Deny myself? Take up my cross every day? Follow you to what exactly? For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit their very self? Whoever is ashamed of me and my words, the Son of Man will be ashamed of them when he comes in his glory, in the glory of the Father and of the holy angels. Jesus says, let me lay some ground rules for you real quick. I see y'all following me because you knew I had a fish fry last week. I see you following me because you got this ailment that you need healed. I see you following me because it's the cool thing to do right now, but I'm about to die. And so what I want you to be reminded of is, if you say you're following me, if you say you're my disciple, then there is something you got to do. Take up your cross. This picture of punishment, of excruciating pain, and carry it every day. This reminder of death, carry it every day. And deny yourself. That means when you look in the mirror, the very person that you are by yourself without Jesus, you got to kill that person. Every day. That means it's not a one-time thing. I didn't say, you know what, on March 13, 2011, I'm going to deny myself and from now on never have to do it again. I wish denying yourself was a one-time decision and you didn't have to do it again. But Jesus says, look, if you want to, this is the clause. This is the requirement, non-negotiable. But then he says, whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life from me will save it. I remember reading this when I was studying the Bible. And 8 years ago, I was in college. I was the man on campus. I was the frat guy. I was the one. So I had to highlight this, and in my Bible, I wrote popularity. Because I wasn't about to be popular anymore. I wasn't inviting people to Blue Jammer anymore. I was inviting them to Bible study. When you replace Blue Jammer with Bible study, your friends kind of disappear. But then Jesus said, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world? Friends, access, cars, clothes, money, and still be empty. Because it's waging war for your soul. And then Jesus said, whoever is ashamed of me and my words, I'll be ashamed of them when it comes in his glory, the glory of the Father and the holy angels. The last thing I want is to spend my whole life saying, you know what, I'm good. I'll make it to heaven, and you get to Jesus, and Jesus is like, Jesus is me. I'm here. I don't know you. Nobody wants that. But have you set yourself up to figure out whether or not that will be you? Nobody wants to get to a place where you're like, I don't know. But guess what? If you don't deny yourself every day, if you haven't believed, repented, and been baptized, then it might stand to reason, according to the scriptures, that you ain't on the winning team. See, when we take up our cross, it feels like we're losing everything. It feels like, you know what, this is lame. This sucks. I'm trying to go out on Friday night. Oh, can't do that. All right. Share my faith. The places I would go on Friday nights, I don't think I'm sharing my faith there right now. You see, sometimes Satan wants us to believe we're losing when we're actually being reminded that there's a war. And when we put our faith in Jesus and move as if we put our faith in Jesus, that we're actually on the winning team. No matter where you are on your spiritual journey, it's never easy to die to yourself. Like, I don't care if you've been doing it 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 2 years, or 6 months. It's never easy because it's a battle. What soldier goes into a war during wartime while it's active and says, oh, why are there bullets? No soldier says, oh, why are they trying to hurt me? Why are they trying to kill me? Nobody does that. But yet we get lulled into thinking we're not in a war. We get lulled into thinking that there's not a battle and that there aren't opportunities for Satan to take us out. You see, there was a point in time in the movie where T'Challa, as Killmonger is getting his forces together and about to activate his plan, T'Challa came up over the hill. And theaters everywhere, people cheered because they wanted T'Challa to be alive and they were happy to see that he would be victorious. It's because he reminded those loyal to him that death had no permanent victory over him. And in the same way, death has no permanent victory over you because Jesus died on the hill and resurrected. He minds those loyal to him. We can keep fighting. But if you stop fighting or you haven't even started and you're here right now or you can hear my voice or see me on Facebook Live, I want you to know you can still be healed. In your disillusionment, you can still be healed. In your discouragement, you can still be healed. In your despair, you can still be healed. Y'all know how this goes. You can go ahead and say it too. In your dysfunction, in your distraction, you can still be healed. Isn't it interesting that Jesus still offers his enemies an opportunity to still be healed? Like, T'Challa after that could have been like, I'm out. I won. It's over. Now, mind you, Satan is not going to get this opportunity, but we do. We get an opportunity to realize, you know what? Despite what I've done, who I've been, and where I've gone, I can too still be healed. T'Challa said, we can still heal you. While there's breath in your lungs, you can still be healed. I imagine for some of us, when we first saw this movie and we saw this scene, You know, I know I did. I kind of hoped for a redemption story. I hoped that Killmonger would take the olive branch and say, you know what, I can live another day. But yet many of us find ourselves in positions where we are at a crossroads. We can either take the olive branch that Jesus extends, and when he says you can still be healed, we can take it, or we can do exactly what Killmonger did, say, you know what, so I can be in bondage? That's what many of us think Christianity is. If we're honest, many of us think Christianity is, that means I can't do this, can't do that, can't go there, can't be that, can't see this, can't. It's a list of all the things we can't do. And Jesus is like, I'm here to give you life and life to the full. Life to the full. And so if we take the opportunity to see it, we can recognize that we killed Jesus with our sin. We killed Jesus with our failures, with our selfishness, and yet he provides an opportunity to join his team while we're still alive. You know, over the last 3 weeks, like I told you, I've been to 3 funerals. Jamal's 12-year-old sister, my 45-year-old cousin, and my 69-year-old aunt. The aunt who was sitting right here 2 months ago. They got to see me preach 2 months ago. And last week, as I was sitting at her funeral, a woman who had been a disciple over 20 plus years, a woman who, you know, was so excited to see me preach, the preacher asked the question, are you ready? He pulled no punches during this eulogy. He said, are you ready? Because we can celebrate knowing where my Aunt Eunice is. We can celebrate knowing that she lived this life, and I was so impacted by the fact that everybody at that church loved her. And I sat there, happy, conflicted, sad, frustrated, a little upset with God. Like, God, come on. And yet, we extend to you the same question. Are you ready? We're going to close out in 2 Peter chapter 3. 2 Peter chapter 3. Starting in verse 8. It says, but you must not forget this one thing, dear friends. This is Peter again. A day is like 1,000 years to the Lord, and 1,000 years is like a day. The Lord isn't really being slow about his promise, as some people think. No, he's being patient for your sake. He does not want anyone to be destroyed, but wants everyone to repent. But the day of the Lord will come as unexpectedly as a thief. Then the heavens will pass away with a terrible noise, and the very elements themselves will disappear in fire, and the earth and everything on it will be found to deserve judgment. We all deserve judgment. Since everything around us is going to be destroyed like this, what holy and godly lives should you live? Looking forward to the day of God and hurrying it along. On that day, he will set the heavens on fire. The elements will melt away in the flames, but we are looking forward to the new heavens and new earth he has promised, a world filled with God's righteousness. You know, some of us can be so impatient with God for the things we want and then want him to be patient with us for the things we don't want. God, answer my prayer for this thing that I want. But he says, I want you to repent. And you're taking quite some time. I want you to change, but you want me to be slow in judgment, but quick to answer your whims. You see, God doesn't understand time the way we understand time. And that is to your benefit. Because if you don't want God to act. You don't want him to judge you in this moment. Because every single one of us has failed. Every single one of us has faltered. Every single one of us has made terrible decisions. And yet he says, you know what? There is one remedy for all of that. Jesus' blood and sacrifice. There's a war. And the war is raging, and the stakes are our very souls. Our King Jesus led the way in death and resurrection so that one day we can follow him. But ultimately, those loyal to the King will reign victorious. Whose side are you really on? To God be the glory.
Thanks for listening to this week's sermon. New sermons are uploaded each Monday morning. Simply search The Path Church Atlanta in iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting service. Additionally, we greatly appreciate your feedback on iTunes. If you would like to learn more about The Path, we encourage you to visit www.thepath.church.